It's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and, well, what if I were to tell you that we were going to talk about a book this hour written from the standpoint of a retarded kid turned adult who's in a coma, and his mentor, who from all physical accounts is suffering from Down syndrome. This would probably not make you run to the bookstore, and I'll tell you what, you'd be missing something. I'm doing that a serious injustice, and author Del Stecker will do much better at that. He wrote it. It's amazing. This is up there among the best books I've ever read, and there's no way that I can fully describe it. It's terrific on every level, from spiritual to spellbinding mystery. So, Del, firstly, it's been a long time. Welcome back to the Raleigh James Show, and thanks for writing it.
Well, Raleigh, all I can say is it's great to be back with you from the Lunatic Fringe.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I remember we first met when you were writing your first book.
Yeah, and you were based out of Philadelphia then, and I was getting a signal bouncing off of Calgary, Alberta.
Yeah.
And I was in the mountains writing, and you were there with me through the whole thing.
Oh, and I appreciate taking me along for the journey, because it was a great one. Now, before we get into TARD, obviously you were not a kid when you decided you were going to turn to writing as a career. What caused you to do it? And I don't only mean the impetus, I mean having the nerve to walk away from, you know, traditional jobs in life and saying, I'm going to be an author.
Two things pushed me. One was from years and years ago when I was a teenager, I had leukemia. And at one time they told me I only had a few weeks to live. And I didn't agree with them. I was going to be stubborn. And I wrote what's now called a bucket list. Mm-hmm. And one of the things on there is I wanted to write a novel. And then years later, I had difficulties in life, and I was experiencing some burnout, and I looked at my list, I dug it out, and there were two things left. One was to write a novel, and the other one was to learn how to fly an airplane. And I get the worst stomach in the world. I get sick, you know, walking upstairs sometimes. So the airplanes were out. Never did learn how to do it, but the book was there, and I just went up, got into a situation where I could make at least a living. But isolated, and I just wrote the book, and I just wanted to finish that list.
Well, so you certainly did. And from the first book through everything else, and we're talking fiction and nonfiction and historical, mm-hmm. and they're all just terrific books. And you should be known everywhere. But when I get to TARD, like I say, I'm somewhat tongue twisted because I don't know how to describe this in a way that would make someone want to read it. And I'm not kidding when I say if you don't read it, you're missing out. So describe TARD to me.
Well, it's a multi-layered, multi-genre. It's got just about everything you could possibly think about in the way of theology, good and bad, just violence, the response to violence. It's got, like you mentioned, the two main characters. One's in a coma and had always been seen when he was not in a coma as being retarded. And his best friend and mentor, who reads to him and never gave up on him, was somebody who had an extremely rare, probably one in a gazillion condition where they had Down syndrome in appearance but had normal intelligence. Actually, extraordinary intelligence.
Yeah.
And the two characters go through life living it differently from anyone else because their response to how they were treated and what violence happened to them, it just teaches lessons about how to live. I sometimes pick it up, I read it, look, dip into a page or two, and I say, boy, this is really good. Who wrote this? I mean, seriously.
No, I know. I understand completely.
Yeah, it's one of those books that I like to tell people I wrote it. I'm really proud of it. But even if I weren't the author, I'd be telling people about it because everybody who reads it comes away from it changed. And I think that's what a writer really wants to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is just incredible. And if somebody reads this and doesn't tear up, at least in some part of it, they've got a hole in their soul. It's absolutely going to tug at the emotions, no matter who you are or where you are. But I was laughing when you said, gee, this is really great. Who wrote it? Because at least for me, even just writing journals or something for radio, stuff like that, every now and then I'll write something. I'll look, damn, that's good. It's almost like I didn't know I was writing it. Like it was written through me. Like I'm at the keyboard, but some force greater than me is going through it. And I'm sure in part of that, you experienced that with Tard.
Oh, definitely. And some of the content, of course, is, I don't want to steal your line, but it is out there on the fringe.
Yeah.
It's really one of the things that I've tried not to force upon anyone is to see that Matt, who has carried around the fact that everybody thinks he's got Down syndrome, but he's not. He's trying to respond to the world following the most pure dictates of how to be a good person. And I did not want to force anyone to say, oh, well, that's the Christ-like approach to life. But basically it is, without any preaching. And it's also the kind of book that I don't think too many church people are going to like, because it's got some pretty rough violence in it and some pretty rough sexual nature, but not meant in any, at least for me, not to be titillating or it just, the story came out. I don't know how it all came together. In the end, I even told somebody, this took, 13 or 14 years for it to be completed. But it wasn't until I got actually to the end with the baseball connection, because of the readings of the book by Shoeless Joe. I actually went to Field of Dreams at the actual height of the corn in August of the year. And that was what actually got me towards the finishing part of the book.
Yeah.
So, that's all I can say is it was one hell of a ride and a great experience.
Well, it's, as I say, it's just a wonderful read, and I wanted to talk to you on the air about it in particular because I think that, again, some people are just going to pass it by, what's this? But it's one of those books that, man, when you read it, you will walk away changed. And you mentioned The Game of Life. Many, many years ago, long before we were walking the planet, Florence Scovel Shinn wrote The Game of Life and How to Play It. And I thought about her when I was reading Matt's life and how he approached it. And I thought, yeah, this guy's got the game of life down. And it's just terrific. So I gotta ask, how do you follow this?
Oh, gee. Actually, one of the things I did a couple years ago was true life-inspired short stories that were crime-related that all happen in and around or primarily in Chicago. That's where I spent my childhood. And one day I was asked to consider to write a short story for an anthology from the first person. And I did it. It was selected. And then the book processor and the guy that takes it from concept and gets it published, he died, of all things. Ugh. And so that took about a year and a half to finish that process. And while it happened, I just kept on writing more and more stories that were similar with the same character. And I was assigned a deal with a publisher to do a trilogy. And right about the time the second book was finished, they went belly up.
Oh, geez.
And I never finished the trilogy. So now I am reworking the stories, and hopefully in the next year it'll come out. But it's every crime story is based on something that happened that I knew of or experienced, and it all started from one in Chicago when I was a kid. So.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And here we are.
Yeah, on WGN. Of course, today you listen to the news, any newscast, any hour, and man, you'll get crime stories, no doubt about it, more than ever. So I assume that'll be the third of Tom Osewski?
Yeah, and actually I'm going to go back and take those two first ones, augment some stories within it, do some editing, and then complete the entire trilogy. No one will really be shocked, or disappointed or criticized me, because it was the first two were on ebooks. They had very small distribution, and then the company went belly up. So it'll get that whole storyline out in a huge book, probably about 600 or 700 pages.
That's just terrific. We're talking to Del Stecher, and if you'd like to join us, 888-876-5593. That's 888-ROLLYE. I got a bunch of questions, but I promise not to hog if you've got a few too. I'm Rolly James. It's WGN Radio.
This magic moment, so different and so new, was like any other, until I kissed you, and then it happened. It took me by surprise, I knew that you felt it too, by the
WGN Radio. I'm Rolly James, and Mike, in his truck, who takes us along for the ride last night, said, "Will you play that tomorrow night?" And I figured, well, why not? Yeah, never would have picked it out myself, but it was Jay and the Americans, Jay Black, redoing a big Drifters hit from a decade earlier. Drifters got number 4 on the R&B charts, and then 1969, Jay and the Americans got it to number 6 on the pop charts. So there you have that. And there's a lot of magic moments in Tard, and it's absolutely worth the read. And Del Stecher is the author, and he's joining us this hour. And, you know, one of the real heartbreaks, Del, and doesn't matter whether it's the obscure soul that I love and never can find and all the records I know I've never heard, is if you're an author and you're writing great books, how do you get it out so that people really know it's there?
Oh, today it's a maze. Everything's changed in the last 20 years in publishing.
Yes.
I remember about 15 years ago, I was flying on an airplane when someone had one of the first Kindles.
Mm-hmm.
And he was explaining to me what it was going to do to publishing. And, I was just dealing with getting my first book out at that time. And, you know, I was thinking a Stone Age, because it was, everybody thought it was a hardcover book.
Sure.
Get it advanced and, move along. Everything's changed. I think right now about 70 or 80% of books are bought over Amazon. Early on, I had bookstores and, you'd go to, you'd do signings and all kinds of things. That's all ended. Very rare does that happen. COVID kicked the heck out of the appearances I did. Right now, it's very difficult. Big publishers deal with their tried and true authors. So if you're new or not well known, it's just really you're slugging away. Social media has changed everything, and I'm at the age, and I'm 73 this year. I followed Garrison Keillor, for a long, long time, and he's had his own difficulties, but he talks about himself now as a writer. He's in his 80s. He's a white guy, and people don't care about him very much. Edgier, new things, flash fiction, those kinds of things, quick things that are short, attention span, loss of readership across, you know, what used to be traditional audience. It's hard. It's really hard. And I'm not a social media type person. So
Charts
had it's been out a little over a year. Great reviews. Very, very modest sales. So I really appreciate you letting me have a chance to talk to people about it.
Oh, absolutely. And it's available on the dreaded Amazon, of course, which, by the way, I was going to put a link up there. I'm calling the dreaded Amazon now because I got a notice yesterday saying we have removed your Amazon Associates account because you are selling bounties. And I thought, what the hell are bounties? And I had to look this up. By the way, I'm not. But it's obviously one of this robotic things that they just decided they'd cancel my account. And I found this out because I went to do a link for TARD, and it just wouldn't let me. So I thought, geez. And that's when it really hit me that they are like 70% of it. And yes, I buy so many things from Amazon. Certainly not only books, although they started that way, but virtually everything. But, you know, again, Amazon's kind of like Google in that if you don't know what you're searching for, you're probably not going to find it.
Yeah, that's very true. That's very true. And COVID actually really got me away from contact with my readers because my nonfiction books are both World War II Navy books. And I did a lot of speaking to audiences that were interested in World War II or naval history. And I would invariably, every time I would speak, 50% or more of the audience would buy books directly from me.
Absolutely.
And COVID killed that. So it's really hard to get back into that kind of mode of being in touch with people. So I'm always happy to talk to anybody about my writing and experience of writing. But it's been really the last 4 or 5 years have been very difficult.
Oh, absolutely. And like I say, it's really the reader's loss because there are countless people who would read this if they just knew it was there. So that's what we're trying to do tonight is get you to know it's there. Del Stecker, and it's STAECKER, TARD, of course, as in retard, and you'll see why. And yes, you can on Amazon, but you'll have to go yourself since I can't give you a link. In the meantime, we'll be back to Del in moments after we find out what's going on in the world at large from WGN Radio News on WGN Radio.
V-V-5-5-4-4-4. I smell smoke in the auditorium. Charlie Brown, Charlie Brown, he's a clown. That Charlie Brown, he's gonna get gone. Just you wait and see.
Why is everybody always picking on me?
That's him on his knees. I know that's him. Yelling 7-11 down. Boys, Jim, Charlie Brown, he's a clown. That Charlie Brown, he's gonna get caught. Just you wait and see.
Why is everybody always picking on me?
Who's always writing on the wall? Who's always goofing in the hall? Who's always throwing spitballs? Guess who?
Who, me?
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. I know you're saying, what are you playing hits for? Well, I'm playing it because Linda in Richardson Park requested it last night during trivia, and I promised I would, and she was great. She kind of broke the loggerhead about the answer when she had so many great guesses, none of which were right, but all of which were close, and that allowed Nancy at the end of the show to come up with the answer, which if you were listening and saying, what was the answer? Happy hour. All right, so clear as mud, but it'll replay on Friday if you missed it last night. In the meantime, we're talking to Del Stecker, and again, STAECKER. I want you to read TARD. I really do. I will be very surprised if there's anyone who comes away from this book not glad they wrote it. It's absolutely inspired as far as that goes. It's interesting, Del, what you're saying about the way books are sold, because it sort of mirrors the way records are sold right now. You know, you don't go to the record store and buy a hard copy of anything. What percentage of books are actually in print versus being a download or on a Kindle?
You know, I don't have the exact figures for that, but it's got to be very low. I'm thinking about my own experience across the board. I would say probably 2/3 of my books that are sold are Kindle or some kind of electric version, digital. Mm-hmm. The hard copies, the old-fashioned hardcover. Very rare, very expensive. You know, it's I think probably about $30 for a good novel. Paperback's probably $10, $12, $13, and what you can get a Kindle for as cheap as $1.99, or in some specials even cheaper. I don't know the exact, across the country, but I do know the figures of just even readership has been probably pretty stagnant in actual numbers. You know, there may be 3 or 4 million, avid readers, book buyers, out of a population of, 340 million? That number, 50 years ago was probably the same, real avid book buyers. So the percentage of people in the country that are buying books is going down.
Yeah, shockingly so. And, it might be generational, but I know in my case, I cannot read them on a computer or on a device or whatever. If the only copy I have is electronic, I print it out, all 300 pages or whatever, because I got to tactically hold it and see it and all that. I can't imagine, curling up in bed with a good Kindle. It just it doesn't work for me.
I'll have to admit I'm the same way, and I'm a Luddite in some ways when it comes to technology. I actually wrote my very first book longhand on scrap paper.
Wow.
Actually moving on through my writing time using a computer and all that has been very, very much a learning experience for me. I like it. Editing's a lot easier.
Yeah.
But there's something about, to me, the actual feel of a book.
Mm-hmm.
I do know that there have been studies that our brains, looking at something on a screen digitally, we see it as two-dimensional. But even though a book is on a flat plane, it's the tactile response we have, and we see it, our brain sees it as 3D, and we restore differently. Our memories are different. So I can't give up my books.
No, absolutely not. And again, it could be that, we're fossils or what have you, but I just don't get it. But then again, when we look at the percentage of people who are reading being probably almost in single digits, that's shockingly bad. On the one hand, I say, well, every now and then, like when Harry Potter first came out, suddenly kids who never read before were reading. And then I say to myself, well, hell, if Harry Potter came out now, would anybody discover it? We're back again to how do you find this stuff? And that's got to be a great frustration.
Yes, it is. And, I started out in my early 50s coming back to being, my dream to be a writer or to write a book and ended up being a writer. It's very frustrating, but where there's a hope, I've always been an optimistic person. I always joke, I look at the big pile and I'm still digging for the pony. So
yeah, absolutely. I'm with you there.
I had a friend that learned of the book, read it, and promised to share it with others and actually take the copy. They bought a regular hard copy, paper version, and pass it on. I think word of mouth is always the most important thing.
Yeah. Now, Donovan's in Vancouver, and he wants to join us. So, Donovan, welcome back to WGN.
Oh, hi, Raleigh. Great to be. Thanks for taking my call. It's been a while, I know.
Yeah.
I had a question for Del. I just went on audible.com as a totally blind person. I unfortunately, can't read the print copies, but I was disappointed that I didn't see an audio copy, and I'm just wondering if you have it perhaps in another audio version that's not on Audible.
No, it's not done on Audible or any other kind of version like that. That comes down to expense that, for the publisher, you know, if they're going to do it as part of their deal. They've not decided to do an Audible version. But hopefully they'll hear what there's a demand, at least from one out there, that might make them change, you know.
Yeah, it's tough. And, you know, Donovan, I'd suggest that Del read his own writing, but I tried to read my book, and hell, I do this for a living, and I couldn't. I just couldn't do it. So it's not easier, and to find a narrator, it is terribly expensive.
Yeah, it's actually
more expensive. What does that run you at, the cost of an audio?
Well, it depends on who you're using, but, I mean, it's not hundreds of dollars. It's thousands and thousands of dollars.
Oh boy!
Yeah. Raleigh, you're really right. An author can rarely read their own work. You know, our perspective is totally different from what readers are. You know, once you've created the book, you know, like I said before, rarely, you know, I can come back and go, "Oh, gee, who wrote that?" But once you get into it, the memories, the perceptions. Things get all muddled differently, and then try to be able to do it verbally. I think that's really a hard call.
So now, Donovan, let me ask you, is it possible that there's any services where people will volunteer to read books?
That's a great question. I know back when I was a student at University of BC, the Crane Library, the Crane Resource Center, would have volunteer readers. Now, I'm not sure. I don't think they would do that if you're not taking it for an academic course.
Right.
So,
we'll see that.
They used to have RFB&D in the States, but I'm not sure if there is a service that's out there still, unless it's a question of getting a text copy of the book and having the computer software, the JAWS software, read it out loud, which is nowhere near as good.
Oh, God, no. AI's not there yet, Donovan.
Nope.
Now, Donovan, one day I would like you to know the book very intimately, because what your statement in there about having the Audible version, it relates right to the story itself, because for many, many years, Matt reads his books, and that's how the character of Richard laying on comatose, the world thinks he's comatose, but he can hear Matt reading to him, and that brings him out of what the world thought. He was retarded, but he wasn't. He's actually quite smart, and he's read too. So that's very interesting twist tonight.
Yeah, it'd be a great book as an Audible. And Donovan, I'm glad you brought it up, because maybe there is. You know, when you're not with a big publisher, the bucks just aren't there. But maybe there's a way for some type of a volunteer organization to do that.
There's got to be some not-for-profit out there who would engage with it. Maybe over the next few hours, one of our blind listeners might be able to chime in.
Sounds good. In fact, Karen, who is blind in Chicago, is calling now, so we'll check her out.
Amazing.
All right. Thanks, Donovan.
Thanks, Raleigh.
Appreciate it.
Bye.
All right. So, Del, I'm sure that, you know, that kind of thing, you wouldn't be in it for the profit of it. If somebody were willing to do that, I think that you could make it available. Am I right?
Oh, I certainly would. I would. You know, I certainly like getting royalty checks, but I'll tell you that the ones I've gotten in life haven't been all that great.
Yeah.
And that's not why I write. You know, I write because I just have to. You know, I just have
to
get it out. So,
all right.
If somebody wanted to do an Audible version, I'd give up my rights for that entirely.
Oh, that's terrific. Karen in Chicago, welcome.
Hi, Molly. I was wondering if Del ever checked with the National Library Service, Talking Books for Blind and Reading Disabled People. Now, I understood that they had volunteers that read. Now, I know they're doing a lot of recording of commercial books, but I think we still have our own readers. It's the National Library Service.
Okay.
Where we get our talking books from,
okay.
And they're free of charge. And for those who don't use computers, or like some of us don't, I'd rather read a cartridge a lot of times than try to look it up on Bard. And I get a lot of cartridges, a lot of talking books.
Well, terrific, Karen. Thanks for the suggestion.
Not a problem. And thank Del. You know, this book sounds so interesting. I really want to read it.
Yeah.
And that's why I called about the Talking Book Service.
Yeah, it is. It's absolutely worth the read. And let's try to find a way to make this possible.
Thank you so much.
All right, thanks,
Karen. Keep up the good work.
All right, you too. We're talking with Del Stecker. Tarred is the book. If you can read it, you should read it. If you can't read it, maybe that's something that we have to work on starting now. Well, I know that regardless, if you're listening to this show, you're a radio lover. So, yeah, time to talk about the C. Crane Company. And Bob Crane years ago shared our frustration that modern radios just had a lousy reception, and he vowed he'd build better stuff, and boy, did he. But not only do the C. Crane radios have the best reception of anything on the market today, but they have a number of other features as well. And one of the best ways to help you be prepared for those occasional extreme weather conditions that knock out the power is the CC Skywave. It is a terrific radio. It sounds an alarm when NOAA Weather issues an alert. Yes, of course, it's got AM and FM. Terrific reception. And, of course, it's got the NOAA Weather Band as well. But it also makes an excellent pocket travel radio because it's got the shortwave and aviation band. Yeah, the aviation band is fun if you're going to be flying. Listen to those air traffic controllers. And, of course, shortwave, yeah, maybe you wouldn't listen normally, but it's got the bands where the first responders are when that real emergency happens. Yeah, long before you're getting those alerts, you'll hear it on shortwave. So it's all in a package that makes a great travel radio that is lightweight and terrific and has lots of features. And you can take a look at it at ccradio.com anytime, ccradio.com. It's the CC Skywave radio. One thing that the C. Crane Company has that's almost as good as its terrific radios is the best customer service. They don't outsource it. They'll talk to you in person. They'd love to hear from you anytime, 800-522-8863. 800-522-TUNE. Yes, you can order by phone. Of course, if you need shipping like tomorrow, there is Amazon and REI and BuyMart. Just look for the CC Skywave. But if you want the real deal experience and lots of information as well as great products, it's ccradio.com. You take a look at the CC Skywave, you tell them Raleigh sent you on WGN Radio.
Let me tell you about Humphrey the Camel ambling across the sands. All the nomads giving him a great big hand. He's a big ugly mammal and he's very, very hairy. All the sheiks know he's a swinging dromedary, uh-huh. Oh yeah. Talking about Humphrey the Camel. In the middle of the night, by the light of an Arab moon, they say that you can see him stomping up and down the dunes.
Well, how do you follow Tennessee Birdwalk? WGN Radio, I'm Riley James. Of course, Jack Blanchard and now the late Misty Morgan. And Jack turned 91 yesterday. Happy, happy. Born in Buffalo, same hospital as Misty 6 years earlier. Of course, if you read his official bio, he's 81, but that meant he was performing in clubs at 11, so don't believe a word of it. However, a big happy birthday to Jack, who is now living in Nashville. And we're talking with Del Stecker, and I hope that if you can see it, you will read it, because you will be missing out if you don't. It's Tarred, and you can get it at Amazon or anywhere else. It's just like I say, I think all your books are great, Del, but this is the best thing you've ever written.
Thank you. All I can say, again, is just thank you so much, Raleigh.
Oh, it's my pleasure, and it sort of breaks my heart that it's so difficult to get this to people who I know will feel the way that I do about it. So if I've gotten anybody to pick up a copy, then that makes my night. But I'm really looking forward to the next group of Thomas Suski tales because, of course, like you say, Chicago-based. It doesn't get better than that.
Yeah, and at one point when that's out, maybe in the next year, and hopefully people from Chicago will really jump on it, I'd like to tell some of the backstories on how those
Absolutely.
Stories.
All ears. We'll spend a whole night doing it. Until then, I want you to keep in touch and keep writing, and I really appreciate Tarred.
Okay. Thank you very much, Raleigh. And
thanks.
I have one request.
Yes.
Someday in the near future, when I'm listening to you, can you play Thank You, John, by Willie T.
I'll play it next. Oh, my God, somebody likes Thank You, John. You know, I played Teasing You last night, so I'll be happy to play Thank You, John. I'll play it next. All right, thanks, Del.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, bye. Yeah, wow, a Willie T fan. Well, I'm impressed. Yeah, we got 2 hours to spend together. If it's on your mind, it'll be on mine, and if all else fails, I've got the tabloids. That's right, Slime from the Checkout Line will be coming up on WGN Radio.
Was it my friend John? He thinks you're out of sight. Yeah, I know that you've been balling. You're as high as you can be. But I knew, baby, you'd come home to Willie T. She was just teasing you.